Today, let's open our Bibles to the book of Obadiah, or Obadiah. This book, I believe, was written right around the time of Jerusalem's destruction in 587 BC, so maybe shortly after that. And the reason that it is written is because Edom has gloated over the destruction of their near neighbor. Edom is to the southeast of the country of Judea. And so they thought that it was a good thing the Babylonians came in and destroyed the country and the major cities, including the capital city of Jerusalem, and destroyed the temple and took the surviving population off into exile. But the prophet Obadiah, the servant of Yah, the servant of He Who Is, says, you shouldn't be so happy because God's judgment's about to fall on you too. With that background, let's read. The vision of Obadiah. Thus says He Who Is God concerning Edom. We have heard a report from He Who Is, and a messenger has been sent among the nations. Rise up! Let us rise up against her for battle! And that's the idea of rising up against Jerusalem and destroying it, that they deserve being taken down. Verse 2, behold, I will make you small among the nations, and you shall be utterly despised. So God's response is, you're taking that attitude toward Jerusalem, guess what? You've got judgment coming too. The pride of your heart has deceived you. You who live in the clefts of the rock, in your lofty dwellings, who say in your heart, who will bring me down to the ground? The topography of Edom is very mountainous and craggy. Lots of places where you can build in cliff areas to kind of protect yourself from any armies trying to come in. The city of Petra, which you see pictures of, is located in Edom. And you know that it is a place that has buildings carved into the cliff sides. Well, that's being played on here in the wording. Is you think that you've got it made by hiding in your cliffs? Well, I'm going to bring you down to the ground itself. Verse 4, along that same idea. Though you soar aloft like the eagle, though your nest is set among the stars, from there I will bring you down, declares He Who Is. You know that some birds, like eagles and vultures and hawks, they like to build their nests way up on the side of cliffs, up in the mountains, and then they soar all over the place, high above people's heads. So God pictures that Edom thinks it's one of those types of birds, completely aloof from everything that's happening around it, that somehow it's going to get away from this Babylonian invasion of the lower Middle East. But they're wrong. God says, I'm going to bring you down no matter how high and protected you think you are. Verse 5, if thieves came to you, if plunderers came by night, oh, how you would have been destroyed. Would they not steal only enough for themselves? Now, think about what is being said here. If your house is hit by a sneak thief in the middle of the night, they only take what they can carry. So it's possible that they won't clean you out. So if Edom were to be hit by a sneak thief, it would only lose some of what it had. Continuing, if grape gatherers came to you, would they not leave gleanings? The grape gatherers would tend to only cut the clusters that were at their ripe peak. They would leave the green grapes, the unripe grapes, on the vines. And in Israel, the culture from the Mosaic Law was those later ripening grapes would be left for the poor to come in and get in a second gleaning. So that's being played here, is that at grape gathering time, the grape gatherers are only going to take the ripest of the grapes and leave the green ones behind. Well, that's not the way it's going to happen for Edom. When the Babylonians come through, they are going to take everything. Verse 6, how Esau has been pillaged, his treasure sought out. Esau is just another name for Edom because Esau became the king of this region when he was alive. In fact, it gets its name, this region gets its name from his nickname, Red, Edom. All your allies have driven you to your border. Those at peace with you have deceived you. They have prevailed against you. Those who eat your bread have set a trap beneath you. You have no understanding. So you don't even realize what's going on here. You're being pushed by the invading forces to your very borders. And even some of your neighbors that you thought you could trust in a time like this, no, they're going to sell you out. Verse 8, will I not on that day, declares he who is, destroy the wise men out of Edom, and understanding out of Mount Esau? And your mighty men shall be dismayed, O Timon. Timon is just one of the main cities in this region. So that every man from Mount Esau will be cut off by slaughter. So there's going to be a lot of death and destruction when the Babylonians sweep through. Verse 10, because of the violence done to your brother Esau, shame shall cover you, and you shall be cut off forever. The Israelis, who got their name from Jacob's God-given name, Israel, are a brother nation to the Edomites, who got their name, Edom, from their forefather, Esau. And Jacob and Esau were twin brothers. And so this spat, this sibling rivalry, goes back to the very beginning of these two ethnic groups. And the Edomites had been jealous of the promised land settlement of the Israelis and have caused trouble throughout time. There was every once in a while, there was kind of peace between them and even cooperation. But for the most part, there's been trouble. And so this has now all come to the head where God will bring judgment on Edom, just like he's brought judgment on Israel. Verse 11, on the day that you stood aloof, on the day that strangers carried off his wealth, meaning Israel, and foreigners entered his gates and cast lots for Jerusalem, you were like one of them. So you Edomites, you were kind of cheering on the plundering of Jerusalem. Verse 12, but do not gloat over the day of your brother in the day of his misfortune. Do not rejoice over the people of Judah in the day of their ruin. Do not boast in the day of distress. Do not enter the gate of my people in the day of their calamity. Don't gloat over his disaster in the day of his calamity. Do not loot his wealth in the day of his calamity. Do not stand at the crossroads to cut off his fugitives. Do not hand over his survivors in the day of distress. These all seem to be warnings to not even participate in the fallout of the destruction of Judah and the exile of the Israelis. Because, you know, they could take advantage of the chaos and go in and plunder areas where the Babylonians had kind of pulled out. Or they could capture those that were trying to run away from the Babylonian forces and turn Israelis into slaves that they could sell for their own benefit, or take their stuff from these exiles that were heading north. So God warns them, don't even think about it. Don't even think that you can kind of get one over the Israelis at this dark point in their history. Verse 15, for the day of he who is near upon all the nations. Now we've talked about this idea that the day of the Lord is a phrase that means a time of judgment where God is bringing sins to account. And there have been many, many days of the Lord. That's M-A-N-Y, M-I-N-I. In the past, there is an ultimate day of the Lord that Book of Revelation portrays, final 3.5 years. And this is the one that we are very much gravitating toward when we're reading Scripture. But this is the day of the Lord in the 500s BC, the 6th century BC, when all of these nations are coming under God's judgment. And that will include Edom. Verse 16, verse 15 finishing. As you have done, it shall be done to you. Your deeds shall return on your own head. For as you have drunk on my holy mountain, so all the nations shall drink continually. They shall drink and swallow and shall be as though they have never been. So the drinking idea here it's a play on the idea that you would drink to celebrate something happening that you were happy about. So drinking a toast to the judgment and destruction of Israel is what the Edomites would be all about. But God says, people are going to be toasting your destruction too. And you're going to have to swallow the wine of judgment. You may remember that Jeremiah had to go around and offer a symbolic cup to all the nations of the Middle East because they were going to have to take the judgment of God into their nation. They were going to have to fall under his judgment hand. So here's that imagery again kind of playing out. Verse 17, but in Mount Zion, there shall be those who escape, and it shall be holy, and the house of Jacob shall possess their own possessions. So this is a prophecy about the return that we've talked about multiple times. So some of the people will get out, they will be in exile, and then a representative sample of the Israelis will return back to the Holy Land and their possessions. The house of Jacob shall be a fire, and the house of Joseph a flame, and the house of Esau stubble. They shall burn them and consume them, and there shall be no survivor for the house of Esau, for he who is has spoken. So the flame that starts with the judgment at Israel, the judgment of Judah, is going to now spread to the house of Esau, that is to Edom, and judgment will come against them as well. Those of the Negeb shall possess Mount Esau. Negeb is southern Judah. Those of the Shephelah shall possess the land of the Philistines. The Shephelah is the transition country between the coastal plain by the Mediterranean and the central mountain portion of Judah, the place where Hebron and Bethlehem and Jerusalem, and then just keep on going north along that ridgeline. That central ridgeline, between there and the coastal plain, there's the Shephelah, which is a transition zone geographically. And so the people living there are going to own the coastal plain eventually. And they shall possess the land of Ephraim and the land of Samaria. That's the land north of Judah. And Benjamin shall possess Gilead, which is, Gilead is the east side of the Jordan Valley. This is all a prophecy about how the Israelis, the Judeans in particular, are going to be back again in the land. God will bring them back in large numbers, and they will spread out again. And that's exactly what happens. By the time we get to Herod the Great, the Judean kingdom, and actually it's right before him, the Judean Hasmonean kingdom had reacquired most of the promised land of David's day. And so many of these regions we're talking about here will eventually be back under Jewish control. Verse 20, the exiles of this host of the people of Israel shall possess the land of the Canaanites as far as Zarephath, and the exiles of Jerusalem who are in Sepharad shall possess the cities of the Negev. Saviors shall go up to Mount Zion to rule Mount Esau, and the kingdom shall be he who is his. This part of the book of Obadiah is probably not just talking about the return from Assyrian and Babylonian exile, and ultimately the Hasmonean kingdom, and then the kingdom of Herod the Great. Because all of that comes to an end again. The kingdom of the Hasmoneans was whittled down. The kingdom of Herod the Great was split up, and then much of it came under Roman control, and then all of it came under Roman control. And the Israelis saw the city of Jerusalem destroyed again in AD 70. And then in the 130s of the Christian era, the Jewish people were exiled again in large numbers out of the Promised Land. And they remained there until we have these mass returns starting with the 1800s and the early 1900s and right up until the present time. It will not be until the second coming of Jesus, though, that the kingdom shall be the Lord's. That's when the kingdom of the kingdoms of this world become the kingdoms of God's Lord and Christ. That's Book of Revelation. So we're talking here ultimately about this coming to pass in the new heaven and new earth in which righteousness dwells and over which Jesus is the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. So we have kind of a very long viewpoint that is presented in this little tiny book in the Old Testament. Judgment of God is coming in the 6th century B.C., but the kingdom of God is coming many thousands of years later with Jesus ruling and reigning as the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. At this point, we want to go back to the book of Jeremiah, chapter 48, get to the right one, is going to continue this idea that the judgment of God is falling against many of the lands of the Middle East during this time period. We were just talking about Edom. The neighbor immediately north of Edom is Moab, and it is the first one that's mentioned in this prophecy that we're going to go to now, Jeremiah 48. Concerning Moab, thus says he who is of the hosts, the God of Israel. Woe to Nebo, for it is laid waste. Now we're going to see a lot of regional and city names here, and I'll only explain a few of them. Understand they're all in the area immediately east of the Dead Sea. That's the general vicinity of Moab. Now, Nebo is of interest because it's the region immediately to the east of the northern tip of the Dead Sea. And it was in the land of Nebo that Moses was given a glimpse of the Promised Land and where he died and was secretly buried by God. In fact, that's how it got its name. Nebo is just a variation of the Hebrew word for prophet. So it's the land of the prophet's burial. So God says, "Woe to Nebo, that region, for it is laid waste. Kiriathaim is put to shame and is taken down. The fortress is put to shame and broken down." Kiriathaim is a fortress city in Moab. "The renown of Moab is no more. In Heshbon, they planned disaster against her. Come, let us cut her off from being a nation. And you also, O madmen, shall be brought to silence. The sword shall pursue you." Now, apparently, what's going on here is that while the Babylonians were taking down Judea, destroying Jerusalem and the temple, the Moabites, like the Edomites, were cheering that on. And God is now saying, don't cheer too much because you're also on the hit list. And bad things are going to happen to you. Verse 3, "Hark, a cry for Horonaim, desolation and great destruction. Moab is destroyed. Her little ones have made a cry. For at the ascent of Luhit, they grow up weeping. For at the descent of Horonaim, they have heard the distressed cry of destruction." So these are fugitives. These are refugees leaving areas. Sometimes they're going up from a bad place that's been destroyed. Sometimes they're going down from a place that's being destroyed. But they're crying and running away. Verse 6, "Flee, save yourselves. You'll be like a juniper in the desert. For because you trusted in your works and in your treasures, you also shall be taken." So they put their trust in their gods and their goddesses, in their idols, and in their own self-serving work. And God says, because of that, you're going to be going into exile as well. "And Chemosh shall go into exile with his priests and his officials." Now, Chemosh is the name of the Moabite god of destruction. We've talked about this idea that the Moabites and the Ammonites are brother nations. They are both descended from Lot and his two daughters from an illicit relationship that took place shortly after the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. And that came into the religion of the Moabites and the Ammonites because they would worship this god of destruction, this king of destruction. The Ammonites talked about him being Molech, the king. So Molech Chemosh, the destroyer king. He was worshipped by getting drunk, having sex, and burning up the babies as a sacrifice from the last time this ceremony took place. Don't know for sure, but the ceremony might originally have taken place on the anniversary of the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah and the other cities. Be that as it may, what's being predicted here is that their idol, Chemosh, is going to be captured and taken away along with his priests and his officials into exile. Verse 8, "The destroyer shall come upon every city. No city shall escape. The valley shall perish. The plain shall be destroyed, as he who is has spoken. Give wings to Moab, for she would fly away. Her cities have become a desolation with no inhabitant in them." So they're going to be depopulated thanks to the coming of the Babylonians. Cursed is he who does the work of he who is with slackness, and cursed is he who keeps back his sword from bloodshed. Now that's an interesting line. It's put in there as the idea that the Babylonians need to do the judgment of God against the Moabites. Moab has been at ease from his youth and has settled on his dregs. He has not been emptied from vessel to vessel, nor has he gone into exile, so his taste remains in him and his scent has not changed. There's a mention here of the process of keeping of wine, where you move it into a new container away from the sediment. But here, the idea is the sins of Moab remain in place. They're still there. The dregs, the sediment of his sin is still part of his vintage. He still smells sinful. And so that's why judgment is going to come against him, and he is going to be broken like a bad vine or bad vintage jar.